This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast exploring the themes driving markets and the economy today and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we discuss retirement, investors' fears for the future.
In a lot of countries, 20, 30 years ago, there was full provision for retirement through things like defined benefit pension schemes, such that previous generations, this really wasn't on their worry list. And that has shifted quite significantly, really since the sort of 1970s, 1980s, but it takes time for this to really impact.
Why we need to be more realistic.
I think it's a road to ruin for people to take more and more risk with their investment pots to meet ambitious expectations for retirement.
And the realities we face in retirement.
The concept of retirement is getting blurred. It's not that we all retire at 65 and anymore.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Retirement, one of life's distinct uncertainties. No one knows how long it will be until we get there. No one knows exactly what retirement will look like. And perhaps most importantly, very few know exactly what constitutes enough when it comes to saving for retirement. 15%, that's the very broad rule of thumb the investment industry says you should use when calculating the percentage of your income you should save for retirement. How relevant that rule is today and how we think about saving for retirement are two things we'll be discussing in today's show. It comes off the back of a recent study of global investors that revealed many worry that they won't have enough for retirement, while the majority feel a state pension won't be sufficient either, and pension rules are far too complex. The findings are part of Schroders Global Investor Study, an independent survey of more than 23,000 investors across 32 worldwide locations conducted between the 30th of April and the 15th of June in 2020. So to assuage some of those fears and help better understand the way we think about retirement, we've got two guests. There's the first one, a familiar voice, Rupert Rucker. He's head of solutions at Schroders. And for the first time on the show, we've got John Exley, a solutions manager at Schroders, who's really going to get under the bonnet of saving for retirement for us. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of saving for retirement imminently. But in the first part of the show, we're just going to dig around the background and delve a little bit deeper into the findings of that global investor study.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So just to set the scene for you, I thought we might highlight some of the responses in the global investor study that informs the rest of the show. We won't go through all the data, just the highlights. But if you want to find out more, then you can go to schroders.com/GIS. So first up, on average, 41% of investors globally worry that they won't have enough savings for retirement. Rupert, why are people so worried about their pension savings?
So I think that this is a fundamental shift from the past, and just reflects that in the past, in a lot of countries 20, 30 years ago, there was full provision for retirement through things like defined benefit pension schemes, such that previous generations, this really wasn't on their worry list. And that has shifted quite significantly, really since the sort of 1970s, 1980s, but it takes time for this to really impact, such that we're in a situation now where governments are only providing a very small pillar of people's retirement. And everyone's realizing that actually that they need to take responsibility themselves. And on that basis, they're worried that they might not have enough. And that's pretty representative around the world.
Yeah, we'll certainly pick up on that theme slightly later in the show. The study also found that 55% of investors, and Rupert mentioned this briefly, believe that the state pension for retirement won't be enough to live off. So just for an example, in the UK, from October this year, men and women will now have to wait until they are 66 to draw a state pension. This comes after a decade of increases in the qualifying age. To put that into perspective, when the first old age pension was introduced in the UK in 1908, it did not start paying out until the age of 70. Life expectancy at birth then was 40 years for men and 43 for women, and only 24% reached the state pension age. Those who did not would typically claim it for 9 years. So, Rupert, state provisions are clearly becoming more prohibitive, but what does that mean for the individual going forward?
So I think you've touched on one thing. It's life expectancy has dramatically altered in a very short period of time. So this whole concept that you retire at 65, which was embedded in previous generation, is going out the window now. And I think people understand there isn't any particular retirement age, and we may get into that in the study. People have got very different influences as when they retire. And that means, quite frankly, if you want the same kind of lifestyle that you've got at the moment in retirement, that then you probably will have to work a little bit later. It really depends on your personal situation, but I don't think we're going to get these really sort of set retirement ages that we had in the past, and that's definitely the new world.
So people can't rely on the state pension as much as they did in the past. 41% believe the constant shifting of the rules for pensions means they won't specifically save for retirement. Rupert, what effect could that have in the future?
Yeah, I think it's critical that there is consistency and sponsorship from governments if they're not going to fulfill the pledge that they did in the past. And on that basis, then individuals can take more responsibility as long as the rules are clear. So I think there's also a lot of education that needs to happen a lot earlier, maybe even at school, of investing and how to invest and what that means and taking risk. But certainly it's incumbent on governments to make it clearer and more simple, and then our own industry, the investment industry, to assist in all of that as well, if, as I say, that they're not going to deliver that full retirement package.
OK, on to more positive findings from the study. 15.2%, that was the average amount of their income investors said they were saving for retirement. That's roughly in line with financial industry recommendations. John, we'll get to the age-old question of how much is enough for retirement shortly, but is 15.2% a promising start?
It's certainly a promising start. When you take into account that people are probably also effectively saving by repaying the mortgage and these sorts of things, it's a good bedrock for building up for retirement.
And finally, the study also found that a quarter of investors are investing their disposable income in pensions. That's up from just 10% in 2017. Okay, so you can find out more from the study at schroders.com/GIS. But having given you the background, let's get down to the brass tacks. In the next section of the show, we're going to discuss how we think about saving for retirement in working years.
Get in touch with us by email at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com or visit our website, schroders.com/investor download.
In the first part of the show, we mentioned on average, investors are saving 15.2% of their income for retirement. That's broadly in line with the 15% rule of thumb the industry says you should use when calculating the percentage of your income you should save for retirement. So, John, let's start with a big one. Does the 15% rule still hold true?
Well, it's almost certainly the case that as interest rates have fallen, you can rely less on the investment returns you're going to get on your savings. As Rupert says, people are also living longer, so you probably expect the pension to be to be paid for longer in retirement. So 15% is actually certainly the bottom end of the sort of level that people should be saving. Although I would stress that I think you need to look holistically at savings and also include things like how much people are paying off on their mortgage, et cetera, when you do look at the overall savings level that people are setting aside.
It is such a broad spectrum when you're thinking about saving for retirement. One piece of advice is to start saving for retirement as soon as you can. So most saving models are based on people saving from the age of 25 until they're 65. At 25, I had absolutely no clue about pensions, let alone and not a thought towards retirement. So Rupert, you're far more savvy and clued up than I am. What does a realistic retirement look like?
I think one reflection from the study was actually how much return people still think that they can achieve from markets, and it was like 8 or 9% minimum, and a lot more in some cases. And I would suggest that's going to be optimistic going forward. That the net of fees and costs, that the kind of return that people can expect from their money in markets is probably not going to be as much as they've had in the recent past, which has been pretty good, especially if you've been in US equities. So people are going to have to spread their money. They're going to have to take risks and still expect that the returns may be a little bit less than they expect in terms of what the GIS that survey is telling us.
John, what conversations would you be having with people in terms of what they should be expecting from a realistic retirement?
I think to start with, I think there's a danger that we're too negative in all this, and that completely discourages people from retiring at all. So I think we have to start with some reasonable expectations about what they expect in retirement, and actually manage expectations there, and then encourage people to save to meet those sorts of realistic expectations. I mean, one point I would say is that when people used to retire, they used to look forward to things like, the first large holiday abroad, getting a new car, getting the house extension, et cetera, in retirement. All those sorts of things, I think, are off the agenda now for many people in retirement. And they need to establish that they're going to probably be targeting a lot less than the traditional two-thirds or even half of income that they used to have, but equally that's often because they've actually done a lot of the things that people used to do in retirement during the pre-retirement years. So I think the starting point is realistic expectations, and then it's a case of setting aside what people can afford to set aside and setting up a realistic plan for setting that aside over, as you say, as long a period as possible before they retire.
Rupert mentioned there stock market returns over recent years might be influencing some people as to what they might expect from their retirement pot. John, how should investors approach their tolerance to risk?
Well, I think the important point there is that often a lot of the rises have been in response to falling interest rates, and the returns that people can expect going forward are probably lower as a consequence of some of those rises we've had in recent years. I think risk aversion is a very, the amount of risk people should take is the most important question for retirement planning, and I think it's very important that people don't look at this the wrong way around and think, well, I have a very ambitious target, therefore I need to take a lot of risk to meet that target. It very much needs to be the case that people take amount of risk that they're comfortable with in terms of their portfolio, and then basically cut their coat according to their cloth in terms of the realistic expectations. I think it's a road to ruin for people to take more and more risk with their investment pots to meet ambitious expectations for retirement. So risk aversion has to be consistent, or the asset allocation has to be consistent with the individual's own risk aversion and tolerance for risk.
Yeah, we're potentially saving for retirement over a very long period, perhaps 40 years or even more. Risk isn't linear. Markets, as we've seen acutely this year, can fluctuate violently. Rupert, how can we better understand risk as investors?
Yeah, I think it's understanding that once your capital is invested, it's at risk. And sometimes the best way to mitigate risk is to take enough time and not panic and not react to external events like we've had this year, and crystallize your investments. In other words, sell your investments, and that's the worst thing to do, because then you've actually crystallized the loss. So I think it's, if you're going to take risk, then you need to commit a lot of time to that investment to allow the benefits to be attributed to you. That's the key way to, I think, mitigate risks. The other thing is compared to previous generations, that there are a lot more investment opportunities open now with the opening up of the likes of China and lots of other asset classes. So it is actually easier to diversify those risks across a lot more investments than it was in the past. You don't have to put a lot of your money into UK equities, for example. There are lots of stock markets that are now open and diversified to give you more choice. And, you know, that is definitely a benefit them from past generations.
John, you mentioned it briefly in a previous answer about fluctuating interest rates. I mean, they feel more tangible when they affect the return on your savings in your bank account or the interest you pay on a loan or mortgage. But there's also inflation as well, which has a direct hit on, say, a price of a pint of milk. Again, you can feel it more tangibly. You notice it almost instantly. How should investors regard interest rate risk and inflation risk when it comes to the way it affects their investment returns when they're saving for retirement?
Well, I think that's all about the your strategy in terms of your fixed income investments. But obviously inflation-linked bonds are the most attractive asset for mitigating against inflation risk, and really, portfolios should include some inflation hedging assets, such as inflation-linked bonds, as part of the overall portfolio. And also, if you're investing in bonds, you need to recognise the fact that very long-term bonds can be exposed to changes in inflation expectations. So modify some of that exposure to bonds to recognise the inflation risk.
And a lot of those bonds these days, certainly in the developed world, the yield or the interest rate on them will be closer to zero. How does that affect people when they're thinking about what they're investing in for their retirement?
Well, I'd say it goes back to realistic expectations about what they can expect to earn, because most other assets will be priced relative to those assets. So the low returns on bonds probably points to low returns on other asset classes as well going forwards.
Okay, so we know roughly how we need to be thinking about saving for retirement during our working years. So we're done and dusted, right? Unfortunately not. Saving for retirement doesn't just end when you hang up your boots, to borrow a footballing parlance. In the final part of the show, we'll discuss how we need to think about funding retirement in retirement. We've had a good think about what we want to be able to achieve in retirement. We've done all the calculations. We come up with a target of how much we need to save. Sadly, that doesn't mean retirement planning ends there. What happens once you're in retirement, and how much can you afford to spend? Rupert, first of all, how should we think about our income strategy in retirement?
So as I think we've been trying to lead this conversation, is that the concept of retirement is getting blurred. It's not that we all retire at 65 anymore. So I think what the end goal we have is the reasonable life expectancy, which is now in the 80s. So that maybe is what we're looking towards now, rather than a retirement age. So I think what once you've, as a person, you are in retirement, and that's a choice you've made for your own personal reasons. Then at that stage, you've got to look forward to that life expectancy, and determine your mix of assets to deliver the kind of income you need on a daily basis. And you've got to define whether that income is actually coming from capital that you're selling, or is being derived from natural income like dividends and coupons from fixed income, because the biggest risk at this stage is that you start to sell your capital, and that can really turn against you. It's called sequencing risk, to be technical, because that means your capital pot could start to run out much quicker than you expect. So all of that needs to be assessed quite carefully, but it's such a personal decision and point of view, depending on your circumstances.
Yeah, there's a big decision on how we decide how to spend our money on essentials and discretionary. Rupert, how can we manage our expectations in that sense?
I think John intimated it, that there has to be a realization that the kind of lifestyle you might have been wanting may not be achievable. And the survey again reflected that, funnily enough. It did suggest that in the last couple of years, people are not spending as much on luxury items as they might have done in the past. And, you know, that outlook is probably more realistic. The only other thing we haven't covered is the costs. So, you know, previous generations, that there were significant costs that society was bearing in terms of mortgage interest rates, for example, and cost of other basics was much higher. You know, we're in a situation where a lot of those costs have come down, that there's very little inflation from that main basket, the main living cost basket. You know, maybe that's offsetting to a certain extent that this kind of lack of retirement income. But effectively, people, I think, are going to have a more sober outlook.
John Rupert briefly mentioned it there about deciding how and when to sell assets or take some income from the income that you're generating within your retirement portfolio. How do you decide when and how much cash to withdraw versus selling assets?
Well, I think the starting point for your strategy should be just to look at how much income you could get if you bought an annuity. I'm not saying you would buy that annuity, but just to give you a realistic idea about the sort of the annuity rate. So, for example, you might see that if you went out and bought an annuity, the annuity rate would be about 3%. And then you need to be realistic, I think, about how much excess return you're going to make relative to that annuity, which generally invests in bonds, and you might decide you're going to make another 2% for investment. And that would give you a sort of something like a 5% target or something like that sort of order. And then I think you just keep having to monitor that over time, and at any point in time compare how much you've got in your pot with what it would cost to secure yourself income with an annuity. And really a successful strategy in terms of drawdown is beating that alternative of having bought an annuity when you retired. And you would hope that people would do that. But I mean, I think that has to be the benchmark for the sort of pace at which you can draw down your pot.
Yeah, so just a brief explanation. Annuities just guarantee you a certain amount of income over a certain period of time from your retirement pot. It used to be the case that once you're getting close to retirement or in retirement, you put money straight into bonds. Is there more of a question these days, just given the low rates of interest that bonds can
absolutely
yield?
Absolutely. I think the idea that you would suddenly move your strategy entirely to sort of fixed income investment just because you've retired, I think that's well recognised that that's not necessarily the case. And you would expect to have a mixed asset allocation in your early years of retirement, something in equities, something in bonds, and maintain some exposure to growth assets in the early years of retirement. I think it's more as you get into later retirement, you might just want the certainty of your remaining income.
So there we go. Whether we like it or not, we all need to be a little bit more realistic about our retirement expectations. The 15% rule is a guide only, and we all need to be aware of the shift in the financial and economic outlook, particularly given the pandemic. But the same basic rules apply. If we plan far enough ahead and begin saving as much as we can, as soon as we can, we can avoid bigger problems in the future. If you want to find out more, visit schroders.com/GIS. There you'll find plenty more information, including two articles, one of which is how much you should save for retirement. If you want to ask a question, get in touch with us or suggest ideas for future shows, email schroderspodcast@schroders.com. You can read more from Schroders experts at schroders.com/insights. You can also subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please remember to rate and review us. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.